But first today, it was confirmed last night that the South African variant of the novel coronavirus has been found here. And this came as a record 8,248 new cases were confirmed. Cillian de Gascoen, chair of the COVID-19 Expert Advisory Group at NEPHET and director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory, joins me now. Cillian, we'll get to that new variant story in a moment, but can we just talk first about that number of confirmed cases that we heard about last night, 8,248 cases. Is that the actual daily caseload now? Has that backlog that we were hearing about washed through the system yet?
Oh, that's a good question, Katie, and I don't know that I can give you any more insight. My understanding is that it has washed through the system, so we're pretty much back to recording case numbers on a when they're... So case numbers are reported on a day and then they feed into the notification system by the following day. So I think, yeah, pretty much the backlog has been cleared. That's my understanding, but I haven't been intimately involved with it, I'm afraid.
We had Philip Nolan on with us last week, and he was talking about daily caseloads going as high as 6,000 cases a day. Now, obviously, we've already overshot that by a considerable margin. On the current modelling, have you any sense now of when we're likely to see the peak and what that peak might look like?
So President Nolan, I think, spoke on Thursday at the press briefing as well. So I think he was very, very cautiously, I suppose, seeing some... shards of light, I think, that we are starting to plateau. If we look at the positivity rate, that seems to have been plateauing. It's still very high compared to what we would have seen over the course of the pandemic, but it seems to be plateauing. If we're looking at case numbers, we may be starting to see the beginning of a plateauing. So I think he was saying on Thursday that we might see that within the next sort of 5 to 6 days. So at some point this week, cases would plateau. And I think he was thinking that it would be in or around that sort of number, sort of the 8,000. But hopefully it won't go much further than that. And I think the other positive finding that we can take from sort of this week's data would be the fact that the number of close contacts that we're seeing is decreasing. So I do think the measures are starting to take effect. I think people have taken the message on board just about just how precarious and how critical our situation is at this point in time.
Considering though we're not actually testing any close contacts at the moment, presumably that means that the actual daily case numbers are considerably higher than even the 8,000 plus that we're seeing now.
Yes. So is there more virus in the community than the number of cases? Yeah, there almost certainly is.
Any sense of how much more?
Well, if we look back at the data that we would have had from the HSE over the testing of close contacts over the course of the last number of months, from memory, on the day zero test, it was in the region of about 8 to 10%, I think, as a positivity rate. And then the day seven test, I think, was in or around maybe 1 or 2%, something around that level.
Okay. Okay, let's move on to the South African, these new strains. We heard last night from yourself that we've 3 cases, all of them directly related to people who came back here from South Africa.
Yeah.
Are we actually actively looking for it, though? Or did we just look to see what South African travellers did we have on the books and look at the sequencing of their genome?
So we've been doing, I suppose, in the country as a whole, in the National Virus Reference Laboratory and through the Irish Coronavirus Sequencing Consortium, we've been sequencing whole genomes of SARS coronavirus type 2 since the start of the pandemic. So had the South African variant, or the lineage B1351 as it's called, were it on island prior to now, there's a good chance we would have identified it. But obviously, I think it's important to highlight that the South Africans only really announced this to the world in the middle of November, sort of actually probably second half of November, start of December. It seems to have emerged in South Africa at some stage, probably in August, and then became the dominant strain there at the end of the start of November, and that's when they started to become concerned about it. I think what's interesting, I think just to reassure people or to give them some background information, viruses evolve all the time. They change all the time. A lot of the mutations and a lot of the changes that they acquire don't actually have an impact on them, so therefore they die out again. Occasionally, a mutation will arise or a change will arise that seems to confer a fitness advantage or a benefit to the virus. And I suppose what's concerning in some respects about the UK variant and the South African variant is that they both share an amino acid change or a mutation that confers an amino acid change at position 501 of the spike protein. So the spike protein is the part of the virus that attaches to our cells in our airways and allows it to get in. So that 501 mutation appears to allow the virus to attach better.
This is what's making it more transmissible.
But it also appears to allow it to replicate more efficiently. So the viral load loads are higher, so people have more virus on board. So not only is the virus more transmissible, so it binds to our cells better, they also shed more virus when they're infected. But it's
what does that do then to, you know, the metrics that we were told to keep in mind at all times, you know, going back to the start of this, that you shouldn't spend, you know, more than 15 minutes within 2 metres of somebody. And the idea that 2 hours in a room with a group of people would be, you know, would be a high risk. Do we throw those out the window now?
No, not at all. No, it's a really good question. Those measures are really important. And I think the way to think about it is that the virus still needs to transmit from person to person. So it still transmits by the same means that we know it has from the very start, through droplet transmission, through, in hospital settings, sort of aerosol generation procedures. It can contaminate surfaces. So we know none of those things have changed.
Although we do know now, though, that it's more likely we're more likely to breathe it in than to pick it up from a surface. Is that not?
Yes, absolutely. But at the same time, if you have a setting that is where people tend to congregate, or where there's an awful lot of people, and you've an awful lot of sort of high touch surfaces, mm-hmm. then contamination can play a role. But you're right, in the general context, certainly droplet transmission is more important.
I'm just wondering, people out there wondering, this new variant, I mean, we're now hearing, you're saying this week, maybe 25% of the COVID cases might be the UK variant.
Yeah, so they're the data we have from week 53. So week 53 of 2020 would have finished on January 3rd, so up to last Sunday. So what we have monitored, so what we have done over the last, say, so again, it's important to remember that the UK only announced this in the week before Christmas. So I think we've, as a country, we've done quite well in collating the data we have to date. We've gone back to November and tested some samples. So we know that the virus has been on Ireland in the Republic probably since early November, albeit at very low levels. And what seems to have happened over the course of, say, through November and certainly into December, is that it was bubbling away at low level. Yeah, and in some respects, it was a little bit of a perfect storm. You've got a more efficient virus. You've got restrictions being eased, and obviously people socialising in the run up to.
But I think this is what is frightening people now, is that, you know, they had a sense of where they were at up to now. But has this totally been a game changer now in terms of how much more vigilant we all need to be in terms of the transmissibility of this?
Yes, it has. But I think it's important for people to remember that the measures that we have implemented will work. So people need to avoid high risk settings. And as Professor Nolan said on Thursday evening, the figure of 40-50% that people have talked about is this new variant being more transmissible. It's 40-50% of the risk that is there at the start. So if you're in a very low risk activity, say something that's a 1 in a million risk, 50% activity brings it to 1.5 in a million. So it's not very significant. If you're in a very high risk activity, say, which is, you know, 90% are very high risk, and then you increase that by another 50%, it goes very
that's
high.
Yeah,
very high. So the key message for people is to continue to avoid high risk situations, to reduce their contacts, and to follow the public health measures, because they will work. But you are right. And what people need to know is that, yes, a more transmissible virus by definition will be more difficult to control. So it is important that people are very vigilant.
And the other thing that's worrying people is children and how transmissible it is in terms of the child population, because that was the one thing we didn't need to worry too much about up until now.
Yes, well, so the latest information we have from Public Health England in the UK, they are saying that the age and sex distribution of the novel variant is actually no different to its distribution in the other variants that were circulating at the time. So that you're right, there was an initial signal that it might be of more concern in younger people. At the moment, that doesn't appear to be borne out. That's the latest information we have from the UK.
As you say there, it's kind of early days yet, though. We still don't know enough about.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. And again, they only announced it before Christmas. So it is important that we monitor this. And I think what I suppose from a virology perspective, these two variants are both very interesting, because we know how. So as I said, viruses change all the time, and we know how often they change. So we can look at coronaviruses. We know typically they acquire between 1 and 2 mutations per month on average. So if we look at the 12-month period of the pandemic, the majority of strains or of variants circulating would have between sort of 18 and 20 changes. These two variants both have more than that. They both have in the high 20s. So what that suggests, so we need to know, to learn about the virus, we need to know how those emerged. There's been speculation in the UK that they might have emerged in a setting where somebody in an immunocompromised setting, or basically in a sort of a circulating in a persistent infection over a prolonged period of time. So if that can happen with this virus, we need to know about that. So these viruses are useful from an academic perspective.
But I suppose from a medical perspective or from, from all of our perspectives, do they pose a threat to our health? We know today there's only 27 acute beds left in our ICUs. Is this a serious concern, what this virus, these two new variants in particular, might do?
Yeah, so the UK variant is of more concern to us purely because of the amount of virus that's on island, and we know that it's transmitting in the community. The good thing about the South African variant is that we know exactly where those three cases came from. They have been contained, they have been controlled, they have been contact traced, and to the best of our knowledge at this stage, there was no onward transmission from any of those cases.
Have they recovered now, or are they beyond that point?
So I don't have those clinical details, but given the timeline of when the samples came through to us, my understanding is that they have. But as I said, the good thing is we know where they came from. If you go to the UK variant, obviously, as you said, that's accounting for in the region of about 25% of our cases now. So that is circulating on island, and transmissibility is a concern because sometimes people, it's reassuring that the illness is not more severe, but that shouldn't reassure us because actually more transmissible virus
will get
to more cases.
Ultimately.
So yes, we absolutely need to be careful.
I'm sorry, I'm rushing along. Because I have my,
you always rush.
I know, but there's just so much that people I know really want to get from you. The NPHET now is saying that anyone who has travelled from South Africa, regardless of whether or not they have symptoms, they now need to identify themselves with their GP and get tested. That's a change in the criteria.
Absolutely. And that's it comes back to the point you're asking. And that's about the enhanced surveillance. So I think the system worked in this situation. So our clinical colleagues and our public health colleagues identified these travellers over the course of the Christmas period. They presented with symptoms. They were tested. The public health exercise about asking for their travel history identified their source, their origin in South Africa. Specimens came to the lab and they were sequenced, and we have identified the variant. So that's how the public health system normally works. The problem is when you've thousands of cases, it becomes more challenging to do that. So what we're saying from an enhanced surveillance perspective absolutely is asking people with any travel exposure to South Africa in the last 28 days to come forward and to make themselves known. So purely for their benefit and also for the benefit of the society as a whole.
And the other issue for the benefit, when you mentioned benefit of society as a whole, is there some suggestion from what data we see now that this new South African variant might pose resistance to the vaccines that have been developed?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the other reason for concern. So the transmissibility is a concern from the point of view of pressure on the system, as you said. What's concerning about the South African variant is that that has another two mutations or changes in the spike protein. And when we get infected with a virus, our bodies develop neutralizing antibodies. And neutralizing antibodies, in essence, they bind to the virus, they stop it infecting and allow the immune system to mop it up. Broadly speaking, I should preface this by saying I'm not an immunologist, but broadly speaking, those neutralizing antibodies can be divided into four classes for SARS coronavirus type 2, depending on where they bind on the virus. And what the South Africans have reported, two of these mutations that are in the South African variant may impact on the binding of two of those classes. So that's one of the concerns about the vaccine.
Now, that would be a serious concern, though, wouldn't it?
It would, absolutely. But at the same time, it's a theoretical risk at this point in time. So what we need to do is get more data. So what the vaccine companies will do now is that they will collect serum. They'll collect blood samples from people who have been vaccinated in the course of their studies. They'll take those blood samples, they'll go into the lab, and they'll use those blood samples. They'll grow the virus, they'll grow wild-type virus, and they'll grow the South African variant, and then they'll compare how effective the antibodies are against the two different viruses. But as I said, we don't have those data to date, but at the moment it's a theoretical concern, so that's why we need to be cautious.
Okay, when you talk about needing to be cautious, rather than, we've introduced this new regime now where if you're coming in from South Africa or the UK, you need to produce a negative PCR test taken within 72 hours of travel. Would it not have been wiser just to say extend the ban that had been in place since before Christmas? What is NPHET's advice to government in relation to travel from, in particular at the moment, these two jurisdictions?
So certainly, I think NPHET's advice, I think, has been fairly consistent over the course of the pandemic to avoid all non-essential travel. And certainly from the point of view of people who are coming from countries with high prevalence, we are encouraging them not to travel. Now, obviously, there's some travel that is essential in the context of the food chain or essential business and all of those things. But certainly from an effort perspective, we don't want people to travel on a non-essential basis. Equally, we don't want people coming here from high prevalence countries if they don't need to. If they do have to travel, a test pre-travel and a test 5 days post-arrival.
But we're not asking people for the five-day test post-arrival, are we? As I understand it, the only thing we're asking for people coming from these two countries right now is this negative PCR test.
So they will need a negative PCR test pre-travel, and that will provide reassurance. But when they come to Ireland through the passenger location form, we will continue to actively follow them up while they're here to make sure that they don't develop symptoms, and we'll be providing information to them when they arrive. But equally, the amount of travel we have, I suppose, with South Africa, thankfully, is quite minimal, and we've no direct flights. So it's something that is easier to manage, but at the moment, obviously, we are discouraging people to travel.
No, I appreciate that. But when you say we are following up, because we know that there was lots of issues about lack of follow up on those forms going back for months. And I mean, it's just become such a crucial issue now that we're aware of this new variant and the attempts to stop it. It's just, what is Neffet comfortable with the idea that this one test 72 hours before travel is enough to protect us from, importing many more cases like this?
So there are two elements to that. One is the test at a point in time, you're right, is it's good, it's useful for identifying people who are infected pre-travel and for stopping them getting onto the flight. Obviously, there's a possibility that people who are early in the course of the illness may not be shedding virus at that stage, but may still have the virus on board. And they're the ones that really ideally would have a second test post-follow-up at sort of at 5 days post-travel, when they arrive in the country. But equally,
but we're not asking them to do that.
The key message, though, is that we don't want people to be travelling at this point in time.
Yes, but as I say, we're not asking people for that test 5 days after on arrival.
People who are travelling from the high-risk
countries. What I'm asking you really is, would Neffet prefer a more robust regime in terms of arrivals, particularly from these two countries now?
So I suppose on the basis of sort of the information that came out last night, so obviously Neffet will keep all of the new information. So we had a Neffet meeting on Thursday. There'll be another Neffet meeting next week. There hasn't been a group meeting, if you like, since the new information about the African variant has come out. Obviously, there was meetings yesterday with the department. So from our perspective, the self-isolation at the moment is key. And for people who are travelling to fill out the passenger locator form, and they will be followed up in the normal course of events by the HSE, as has been happening.
We hope.
Well, no, to be fair, the HSE has done an excellent job over the last 8 to 12 months.
Okay, and finally, just before I let you go, a note of positivity, the vaccine rollout. Where do you think, when do you think we can begin to look forward to some semblance of normality coming back to us?
It's an excellent question, and I don't think anyone can predict that with certainty. So I think it would be naive of me to try, really. I think the one key element of data we need from a vaccine, we know that they're very efficacious, and we know they'll be effective in preventing serious illness and reducing mortality. The piece of information that we don't yet have relates to what their effect will be on asymptomatic infection and onward transmission of the virus. So now there's no reason to believe that they won't have an effect on that, but until we can be sure that they will stop people having an infection without developing symptoms and stop them from transmitting virus onto others, then we'll still need to continue with public health measures for a long while.
Okay. Okay, Cillian de Gascoigne, many thanks for joining us with that today.
Thanks, Katie.
We'll take a break.